Miss Farnborough, Reel 12.
Paid the full price of that heroism.
Then, don't you think they would be worth mentioning so that
no.
the deeds that those men did would be remembered?
I would hesitate to men. They belong, one can truthfully say, they belong to that multitude of nameless, unknown people whom we call the Noble Army of Martyrs. Unsung, that is the word I wanted. The nameless, unsung multitude of people who've never been called heroes, but perhaps were some of the greatest because they were heroes and martyrs.
In your book, your attitude towards the Cossacks seems to change. From the earlier part of the book, being one perhaps of fear or alarm at the Cossacks, to later on, the sight of the Cossacks inspiring optimism.
No, it's a difficult thing to say. I have always had the greatest admiration for the Cossacks. There were several groups of these Cossacks. Some of them were fiercer than others, but all were very strange, warlike men. I know that there was one division that was called the Dikaya Divisia, or the Wild Division. But nearly all Cossacks had taken the vow to fight and die for their country, if necessary, certainly to kill any enemy that crossed their path. They were ruthless men. I think for that reason they were chosen to go through those villages in the time of retreat and send away from their homes those thousands of refugees, men, women and children, old people and young. They were forced to go lest they should remain behind and made to spy on their own countrymen. And why the Cossacks were chosen, I don't know. It may be because they were all riders with their own horses. They had their own knut. And a flick of the knut was enough to advise a person to obey without defying the rider. But there again, the Cossacks played many noble parts. I think they were men that one could rely on. You know, of course, that most of the Cossacks, in fact, all of them, were free men. I think in many parts of Russia in those days, the Cossacks had their own communities, their own encampments, as it were, where they would grow up, their wives and children, and these men, and many of them were very, very great warriors. They were immune from all taxes. Their only allegiance to the Tsar was to, in time of war, or in time of disaster, if called up, to bring themselves, their equipment, and their horse, and place them at the service of the Tsar. So in time of war, these men came in their hundreds, and they came from all the different parts. They were warriors to the fingertip. They knew exactly what to do. Of course, not all of them were quite ruthless. They had their own wives and children. And I had more than one example of their kindness shown to us, the sisters of the Red Cross. But in general, the Cossacks had rather a terrifying name. I think perhaps it is because of legends woven round them. Take Siberia, for instance. I have known Russians almost shiver at the sound of the word Siberia, as though it were a place in which you entered and leaving behind your highest hopes and ambitions. And yet for me, Siberia was the greatest tonic that could have been vouchsafed me. And so again the Cossacks, the word "the Cossacks are coming" would arouse not only suspicion but fear and terror among many simple-minded people. But when they came, probably they would be distributing bread. Probably they would be helping to build a smashed roof. Probably they would be helping in 100 different ways. So you see, it depends. There are so many sides to warfare, and so many sides to the warfaring men.
You've ascribed some of the German accuracy in the early part of the war to the treachery of some peasants giving information to the Germans, presumably. Maybe the Germans were just more accurate than the Russians were.
The Germans were very accurate in placing their shells. There is no doubt about that. We found that to our sorrow many a time when we had thought we had taken a Vollwerk or big farmhouse where we could rest, and then perhaps to have it shelled, 8 or 10 shells falling in and around that one spot all night long. Their accuracy in firing was phenomenal. I think that it was due to espionage. But then everything goes hand in hand. Espionage for one person can be called heroism by the person for whom he is spying.
At one point, you were speaking to wounded in German. I suppose they were Austrian or German wounded that you had picked up. And there was a hint at an accusation of spying on your part.
Yes.
Had that occurred to you, that that could happen?
No, and it wasn't really spying. I think the man who made that accusation would have done the same if it had been a Frenchman or even an Englishman to whom I was speaking. He was a very strange character. I never quite understood him. I think in some mysterious way he had an underlying hatred or malice or uncharitableness against the English nation. More than once I had heard him say something which was disparaging towards my nationality. So when he could, I imagine he voiced his distrust or even his unfriendliness to me as an Englishwoman. Perhaps I took it too much to heart. It didn't bother me when I was rewriting it, because I realized that it was all on the surface. Though at the time, being very young and very sensitive, and especially being English, and loving to hear every word of admiration that was given to my country and countrymen, it hurt more than it need have done. And I too was quite glad to practice my German a little, because it was a German. I loved the German language. I still do, and have innumerable German books. I think it's a very wonderful, beautiful language. And of course the Austrians spoke beautifully, just a wee bit different from the German Germans, but their German is perfect. And I remember I was very glad to try and chat with him. But it seemed that this man who disliked England and the English people, and this English woman especially, decided that he must reprimand her for speaking in any other language but Russian. I remember telling him, if it were an Englishman, a a Belgian, a Frenchman, I'd try to speak in their language. Yes, yes, he said, but don't forget, you are speaking to an enemy. They are your allies. That's a different thing. Just use your discrimination.
Did he himself know German?
No, I'm sure he didn't.
So he didn't know what you were saying?
No, and perhaps that annoyed him. Perhaps that really was the cause of it. He did annoy it. But then he heard me speaking later of English with some of my own Englishmen when the Locker Lampson's contingent of armoured cars came. They came to visit us once, and it was wonderful to speak English with them. And I remember once I was speaking with one of them, and unwittingly I had turned off into Russian, and I went on describing everything, and then after a little while I stopped, and he said, "Now, please translate that into English." And I hadn't realized that I had been speaking in Russian. It was also part of the day's work, part of the natural conversation.
Was there ever anyone else besides that one individual who hinted at all that you, because you were foreign, might be a spy?
None. Nor did he really. I think it was just on the spur of the moment because he couldn't understand what I was saying. But they all accepted me, even in the Princess Galitzin's hospital in Moscow where I trained. They knew I was not Russian. One or two of them would ask, "From which government are you? From which province?" You say, "From which government are you, Sestrytsa?" And I would say, "Well, I'm not from Russia." "Do you come from Siberia?" "No, not from Siberia. I come from England." And then I would explain that England, Anglia, was an ally. I don't think all of them could understand. They probably had never heard of England. If I had shown them on the map, they wouldn't have understood. But it didn't matter. They were pleased, and they liked to chat with me. And I was received by them just as any other of the Sestrytsa in the hospital. And certainly by my fellow workers. They were wonderful to me. Never in any way did they hint or show by sign or symbol that I was not.
Were you able to get news of what was happening in England at the time?
Now and then we had papers, but not for long. We had, of course, more papers and more news when we got into contact with the English-Scottish hospital in Podgaitz. And there they were receiving papers mostly every week, and they would pass them on to me. I used to read them with the greatest enthusiasm, and I often wondered why they spoke so well of our Russian fronts, because at that time I don't think the real news was leaking through to the English authorities. Probably it was kept back on purpose, because it wasn't all happy. But I'm quite sure that the papers that were given to me by these English-Scottish nurses were worth their weight in gold to me, because I had never seen English papers before. We used to devour the Russian papers, of course. We couldn't always get them, but if one did come into our hands, it passed from one to the other. One, "Now it's my turn, now it's your turn, now it's my turn." So it was really lovely to have news, because in many cases we were completely cut off from the outside world, living at the front, with the front, with our soldiers, surrounded by soldiers. There was little opportunity of getting any contacts with the outside world. Though, as I told you, we did have a liaison officer going practically every week from our frontline unit to Moscow. And he would take my plates, which were developed, and give them to my friends, and they would every time pass them on to the shop to print. And then in due course, the prints would be sent to me.